Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 21 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Philip Rivers Experience. I am your returning host, Greg Smith, at Greg Suss on Twitter. On the line with me, your other host, Joshua Lake, at Lake2QBs. Josh, I'm back.
Hey, the fantastic return. I'm excited to be here for the comeback game.
A fantastic journey or fantastic voyage. A bogus journey. What's the right way to describe this? I don't know. Yeah, vacation was great. Really appreciate you and the guests, James and Ben, for picking up the slack while I was out of town. It was much appreciated. A little bit of a belated honeymoon with my wife. I'd been a couple years saving up, you know, time off and some money to take the trip, and we finally got the chance to do it, and it went off gangbusters, man. We had an awesome time. It was really awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely what you should do. Go enjoy time with the wife, get away. Perfect. So I'm glad you're back, but it was a great choice for you guys to get that time away.
Yeah, and I mean, I was a little begrudged by the fact that it was happening like right in the middle of football season, but I got to follow, you know, over the internet when Wi-Fi was available. I even got to watch some games at some bars and pubs over there, you know, catering to us American folk on the European continent with our, you know, to us, it's like, or to them, it's like a, I don't know, it's an abomination of a sport, you know?
Were there, was it mostly Americans and expats, or was there a pretty decent local community there as well?
No, absolutely only Americans. Like, I ended up posting up in an Irish pub next to a guy who was Irish, and the whole time he was just complaining about it and, you know, watching proper football on a different TV. So yeah, I mean I think in the UK is where you'll get a few more like legit NFL fans, and I'm sure they exist in Europe, but in the bars where I was watching it was non-existent. It was me and other Americans who gave a shit. But yeah, man, anyway, I feel like I've missed so much. Like, that's the hardest part is like kind of catching up. They're wasn't necessarily a toll taken on my analysis somehow. Like, I did really well in the Fantasy Pros accuracy rankings, but my teams, man, they are in the tank. I have started off very poorly for the most part in most of my leagues. It's been frustrating, but I mean, that's fantasy. You just got to kind of pick up the pieces and hope the waiver wire and trades can put it back together. Has there been anything for you this season so far, like, you know, outcome wise, production wise with your own teams that's jumped out? Like, are you doing fairly well?
I'm kind of a mixed bag. I'm definitely over 500 across my leagues. Scott Fishbowl, I'm 3-0 and have a pretty strong team.
Nice.
So that's been fun to see, even after losing Keenan Allen, which was just crushing. It's kind of a mixed bag. I can't even imagine being on the road, on vacation, especially in another country, trying to do waivers. Because I could see Saturday, Sunday, kind of looking at rankings and being able to really focus and make some good rankings. But to be thinking through pickups for a bunch of leagues, I can only imagine how difficult that was. So hopefully now that you're back, you'll kind of have some extra success. And I know this week on the waiver wire will be a lot of hot names, so hopefully you can grab a few of them.
Yeah, doing waivers was definitely the most difficult part, and it is because every roster is so different. Like, it's fairly easy to look at one of my rosters and think, okay, what's the best starting lineup I can put out here? And I mean, I'm going to be wrong on some of those choices, but for the most part, like, by and large, I haven't really crapped the bed on too many lineups. But when you have to kind of sort through the needs of each different roster across, you know, multiple different fantasy sites, like, I play in some leagues on ESPN, some on Yahoo, some on my fantasy league, it's so, like, the process is so different, and there are different leagues with different settings, you know, in terms of whether you need to use FAB or whether everything is waivers or there are first come first serve pickups. Like, it was just kind of a nightmare to try to wade through on a weekly basis. So I'm behind the eight ball a little bit, but you know, we'll see how it goes. But let's stop talking about me and my personal fantasy struggles here. Let's talk about week three. Week three is basically in the books. We have Saints Falcons tonight. It's happening as we record. And you're going to have to keep me updated because I can't watch while I'm recording the podcast. But we can expect that one to be a bit of a barn burner. You know, plenty of scoring, you know, fingers crossed, or maybe not, depending upon what sort of matchup you're in. But let's talk about the games that happened yesterday. And so the first game I want to talk about is the one that I got to watch on Sunday morning. I'm one of those guys who doesn't pony up for the NFL package, so I'm slave to the local matchups on TV. here at my house, and the game I got to watch was Oakland and Tennessee.
Oh.
Yeah, not the greatest of matchups, but from a 2QB perspective, pretty interesting, right? We have Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, some guys who we're still trying to figure out, you know, whether or not last season was what we could expect from them. You know, I thought that Derek Carr was a bit of a fluke last year. I thought that Mariota was going to take a step forward this year. So far, the opposite seems to be true, right? Like, Carr has continued his success. Like, it looks like the combination of their offensive line and their quality receiving options have made him just a viable fantasy starter. Mariota has had some trouble with turnovers, and just in general, that team is not very good. So maybe he's not ready to take that leap just yet. I know you didn't get to watch the game, Josh, but based upon what you've seen for the first few weeks, is there anything about these two QBs that's jumping out to you? Or are you changing your opinions on them like I am?
Yeah, I'm kind of split. I was a little worried about Mariota. I had him reasonably low as a low QB2 in my rankings. And, I mean, that Titans offense is just dreadful. I mean, it looked worse this last week because Delanie Walker was out, but Exotic Smash Mouth is not impressive.
Well, the running game has been impressive to me.
No, that's true. No, it's true. I guess I should say the passing game. That was unclear, but Murray has really been the highlight of the team. The passing game, because Mariota's had volume. He's had 33, 33, and 41 pass attempts in his three games, and despite that, hasn't hit 300 yards. And really, just the offense doesn't look like it knows how to move the ball through the air unless it's just dumping it off to DeMarco Murray. And so hasn't been impressive yet. The last 2 weeks matchups were actually fairly favorable, Lions and Raiders. And so it's not just, oh, tough matchups to explain it away. So I'm definitely a little worried about Mariota at this point.
Yeah, I mean, his best game was actually week 1 against the Vikings. But yeah, to me, it's just been a story of the turnovers. He has 6 turnovers in 3 games, and that's just not going to cut it. The other thing that kind of jumps out to me is the lack of rushing production, and that was one thing that, you know, we thought would really buoy him. Kind of counterpoint to Mariota was Tyrod Taylor yesterday, who did not have a good game passing, but based upon what he was able to do with his legs, he salvaged his fantasy day. And unless Mariota can start to do that, it's going to be really tough to use him if you're depending upon him when a guy like Delanie Walker is not in there, right?
Right. I mean, Walker plays such a huge role in the offense that it's not terribly surprising that he struggled. I mean, I was pretty high on Mariota going into the week, but when we heard that Walker was going to be out, I think it was a fairly easy call to say that Mariota's chances were much worse. But yeah, the rushing, I mean, in 3 games, he has 9 rush attempts for 52 yards. Like, none of us would have been surprised if he had that total in 1 game in these first 3 weeks. And it hasn't been that way at all.
Yeah, and maybe that's something that'll change. It's not like the matchups are getting a whole lot better, though. Up next, he's at Houston and at Miami. And I know Miami's defense hasn't been great, but I'm just a little more worried about a guy like Mariota on the road. Now, what about Carr? Because he's the guy who, to me, has been a little bit more of a surprise. I really didn't think that he was that good of a QB overall, but watching the game yesterday, it seemed like he seemed better to me. It seems like he has improved from last year from like a tools and a skill perspective, and that's kind of what's impressed me the most. Now, it wasn't a great game for him. He only had 1 touchdown pass and an interception, but though 2 weeks before that, he did pretty well, albeit in very good matchups. Maybe I'm overrating it because those first 2 games were against New Orleans and Atlanta, but it's not like the Tennessee defense is really that good either. I don't know. It's like, it's so hard to battle against the small sample size at this point in the season. I always have to remind myself that for a lot of these players, these first 2 to 3 weeks are kind of like the preseason for them because they don't play very much in the actual preseason. But I don't know. Where are you at on Carr?
Yeah, so if Mariota, I was generally right on. Carr, I have not been. I also was in the same camp as you, thinking he would kind of take a step back and regress some. Not be terrible, but just not be worth his ADP. And he's looked good. One thing that certainly has helped him so far is that the defense doesn't look very impressive for Oakland. Sure, they held the Titans to 10 points, but that's not that impressive given what we were just talking about. But the fact that they really didn't stop either the Saints or the Falcons and had to keep throwing really helps him. He's been a high volume guy through 3 weeks, and we got to love the weapons just in Cooper and Crabtree. Even Seth Roberts is interesting. And so it's a team built to pass. He's going to be throwing quite a bit, and he seems to have a good command of the offense. So even though he had a down week with about 14 points this week, I'd say overall he is someone that's outperforming where I expected him to be.
Yeah, you and me both. Now, let's move on to somebody who you had talked about on the previous episode, and that's Carson Wentz. And somehow he's in the top 10 again. Where did this guy come from?
Yeah, this really came out of nowhere for me. I mean, to play Pittsburgh and to look that good really wasn't something I expected, even though they were at home. I mean, to think that he would have 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, and still no interceptions against it's not a great defense, but a fine defense. It's not the Saints. I mean, they're okay. And Wentz has really, through three games, impressed me. And he's making the throws. To me, what really stood out in this Steelers game is that Jordan Matthews, I think, only got 3 targets. Whereas in the first 2 games, it looked like Wentz was surviving by just feeding Jordan Matthews. He didn't do it this game, and he still put up 300 yards. So I have seen a lot to like, and now they're on bye. They come out of the bye to play the Lions, and then they get the Redskins after that. Both of those are just fine matchups for him. I think he's going to come out of the bye as someone you're definitely comfortable starting as a QB2. I don't know how much above that I'm willing to go, but man, he is really, I've got to say I'm impressed.
Yeah, if you want to take a little stroll with me down Narrative Street here, one thing that I did notice looking at his game log is that his worst performance by far was week 2, and that was when he was on the road at Chicago. It is worth noting that Detroit and Washington after the bye are both on the road as well. Mm-hmm. With that said, I mean, the week 2 matchup was probably more just about game script. Their defense was doing so much in that game that he really just didn't have to do much on offense.
Right. No, and that's true. I mean, he still was 21 of 34, so his accuracy was there. He didn't throw any picks, but under 200 yards and 1 touchdown is not what you're looking for.
Yeah, but so if the volume continues to be there, and I mean, against a team like Pittsburgh, you would kind of expect that, but that's based upon the fact that you would expect Pittsburgh to be scoring points, right? Pittsburgh only scored 3 points yesterday, right, and was largely ineffective. And that's actually kind of a subtler takeaway for me from that game, is that I think we really have to start respecting that Eagles defense as a fantasy play. We looked at them last year as an opportunistic defense, you know, that you could use in certain matchups against bad teams, but it might just be that they're a good defense. And if that's the case, then they might be someone you need to go pick up on your waiver wire with one of your later priority picks this week.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call. They are a good defense, and this week meant a lot more than them playing Cleveland and Chicago to say that. But I guess my only hesitation is the Lions and Redskins coming up are both teams that tend to score quite a bit. And so I think you'll have a lot of points against, but they both are teams where their quarterbacks will turn the ball over and they don't run the ball particularly well. So you can still make an argument, but I am a little worried by the points that I think they're likely to have put up. But of course, I would have said the same thing about the Steelers.
Exactly. And yeah, that's
so who knows?
That's what I would have just said in response, but you made the counterpoint against yourself.
Right. It's just, like you said, on the road, going into these places where these teams score a lot, if you're going down that narrative, it could be a risky proposition. But I'm with you. They're better than I expected as a defense.
Yeah, Detroit in a dome, too. I'd be a little hesitant to run Wentz out there in week 5, but coming off the bye, that helps, too. So who knows? He might be fine. Now, I would probably argue overall that if you have Carson Wentz, now is probably a good time to explore trading him, if only because this might be as high as his value gets. I don't know how many people would bite on that, though. What do you think?
I think right now one of the problems you'll run into is there's excitement about so many quarterbacks. I mean, we're going to talk about a few of them. Maybe if you have Russell Wilson's owner may be panicking, if a Jay Cutler or Tony Romo owner, like someone who still hasn't really figured out what to do with an injured quarterback. But when you see several quarterbacks kind of coming out of nowhere to be interesting, and even guys like Brian Hoyer off the waivers being interesting, Trevor Siemian, I wonder how much value you'll get, but there could be someone out there that is very excited about it, about Wentz.
Now, how about in Dynasty? Would now be a fair time to act like you're, you know, buying high on Wentz per se actually trying to get, you know, a bit of an undervalued prospect for, you know, many years to come?
That's an interesting question, because I think his price, just because he was the such a high pick at quarterback, was already high. In most rookie drafts, he was going kind of middle to end of the first round for two QB leagues. It's certainly higher than that now. I wonder if you could even get him for just a 2017 first. I think you'd probably be paying a first and a second or two firsts to get him. And I don't know that I've seen enough through three games to say that I'm willing to pay two firsts. A first and a second, I would think about.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, you mentioned Russell Wilson. We might as well touch on him at this point. He sprained his MCL, supposedly. Now, the reports coming out of Seattle from Pete Carroll are, oh, he's going to be fine. He should, you know, practice and play. I don't know. I don't buy it. It's one of those things where he probably won't practice. And they can lean on that questionable tag all week. And they probably want to do that, especially if they know he's not going to play, if only to make the opposing defensive coordinator have to game plan as if Russell Wilson might play and not just key on the running game. But where are you at on Wilson? I think we have to be willing to, you know, make pickups and roster machinations to ensure that we have somebody to cover if he's not available this week. Would you be looking to pick up Wilson's backup? I obviously don't even know who it is.
Yeah, I mean, Trevon Boykin came in for him and didn't look particularly good. I don't think I'm adding Boykin. I think you could probably find a better option. I mean, if we're in a crazy deep league, like our 2QB staff league is 14 teams, there's no quarterbacks on the waiver wire. So somewhere like that, I could see it. But I'm not picking up Boykin ahead of even, like I said, the Brian Hoyers of the world at this point.
And does this make you worry about Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, Christine Michael at all?
I think Christine Michael, it's probably a fantastic thing. I think with Thomas Rawls, the news that he's got a broken fibula or a fractured fibula, he's going to be out for several weeks. I think Michael's going to see a ton of work regardless. I mean, even if Wilson's on the field, you've got to think they'll emphasize the run. And so I think it's good for the run game. But yeah, it definitely would worry me for Jimmy Graham or Doug Baldwin or the passing options if Wilson is going to miss this week.
Yep, fair enough. Now, we talked about Wentz, and he was the spotlight QB a couple weeks ago with James Simpson. Last week, you talked about Trevor Siemian, and I just listened to this podcast that you recorded with Ben over the weekend, and man, you guys couldn't have been more wrong. It was so much fun to listen to. You're all talking about how he won't have any top 10 weeks, how he's going to get benched for Paxton Lynch, how, you know, he will only have one top 20 week. And of course he comes out and he's the QB1 in week three. I just thought that was just fantasy football in a nutshell, right? Just very, you know, poetic and brutal and just flying in the face of all reason for the most part. And the question has to be asked at this point, like, are you still as low on Siemian as you were last week?
As low? No. I mean, I was dead wrong. I've got to move at least a little bit, but because, yeah, like you said, I didn't expect any top 10 weeks. I didn't think he had it in him. I am not moving off the belief that Paxton Lynch is going to replace him. I think that'll happen this season. I don't know if it's going to be middle or end of the season, but I do think that Paxton Lynch will get his start at some point. But the upside is greater than I expected. They started airing it out. Siemian got to throw more deep passes than expected. There's some flukiness to the four touchdowns because his completions and his attempts look almost identical to week two. It's the four touchdowns versus zero that was such a dramatic difference. But even just watching parts of this game, it did look like he was being allowed to throw deeper, and he was successful. That's kind of the big thing, is you don't know what a quarterback's going to do when the game plan opens up, and he looked fine. So yes, I'm higher on him than I was. There's more upside. I'm not convinced he keeps the job all season.
Yeah, and as great as the week three performance was, it's important to still be able to look back at week two at Indy, or against Indy, and week one against Carolina, where he was under 12 fantasy points both weeks. And yes, Carolina's a tough matchup, but Indianapolis was not. That game was at home against, you know, a very soft defense, and he didn't do much in that game. With that said, the upcoming schedule for the Broncos is very nice from a pass defense perspective. He's at Tampa Bay, home for Atlanta, at San Diego, home for Houston, and then home for San Diego, at Oakland, at New Orleans, and then he has the bye. Houston's really the only bad matchup there.
Right.
Maybe Oakland will be, you know, on the road, and we kind of saw Oakland come alive, albeit against a bad offense in Tennessee. But in general, it looks like Semien, because the Broncos are winning and because he has been serviceable enough, that he could hold on to this job for a lot longer than suspected, right?
Yeah, no, the schedule is hugely favorable, like you said. And the only thing is, like you said, it was last week or week two as well. And so it's just a question of, does easy schedule just mean that they'll be able to run C.J. Anderson and they won't have to pass? But no, it's a fair point that they're not facing a very difficult schedule coming up. They don't play the Chiefs until the end of the season. They really just overall don't have a very difficult strength of schedule. So there's reason to hope. Like I said, it sounds like you may be a little more optimistic than I am. If we were having last week's episode this week, what's your forecast for Semien now with week three as additional knowledge?
I mean, I agree with you that you still have to kind of factor in the notion that Paxton Lynch could take over at some point. But I think as long as they're winning, they can't make the switch, or they don't need to make the switch. Now, an injury could change that. A lot of things could change that, really. I don't know. Like, I think it's fair to expect, like, maybe a 50% top 20 finish from him, especially with considering the schedule. I think that's very optimistic, but I think it's within the realm of possibility. Maybe top 20 is too strong, but like top 24, to where he's just a starter about half the time. Overall, it's less about me being excited about using Trevor Semien and more about me being willing to use Trevor Semien, if that makes sense. Where if I have a quarterback like Phillip Rivers or like Joe Flacco, I have to start considering Semien over those guys if the matchups, you know, make sense or make that something that seems reasonable. I think that the same could be said about Carson Wentz. You know, at this point, they've proven to be a little bit better than maybe we expected. Maybe that's just, you know, the flukiness of the first 3 weeks. I don't know. But you can't just ignore what's happening. And you have to be willing to pull the trigger on getting these guys into your lineup, because if you don't, then you might just be missing out and you might be, you know, dead money at that point. You have to be willing to make moves. And you guys touched on that 2 weeks ago when you said it's like, react, but don't overreact. And there are going to be some rosters where the reaction needs to be Trevor Semien getting into the lineup.
Yeah, no, and it's, I think the biggest thing for me is nothing about the last 2 weeks' matchups said that we would get it right, because Semien, we would have played against Indy, and after a poor performance, we would have benched him against Cincinnati. And so for many, many owners, they got the downside. They didn't get the upside because it wasn't based on matchups here. And so that's kind of my fear with Semien, is you're right, there's some upside, but at this point, I don't know that we're going to be able to predict well enough. I think there's a lot of risk to playing him. And so this is just the risk averse nature coming out, that I almost would rather kind of the boring 16, 17 point guys than Semien, who could have 11 points, 8 points, something like that.
Yeah, I think the other thing you can consider if you have a guy like Semien is maybe trying to trade one of your other quarterbacks to get an upgrade at, say, running back or wide receiver, and then hope that Semien, with that kind of boom-bust nature over the next few weeks, can kind of carry you if you have that depth at QB. Now, not everyone's going to have that, but with the way that, you know, the quarterback position has been shaken up by injuries, I really think that Trevor Semien's a guy who very well might just be a top 24 guy a lot of the time. And that's, if the rest of your roster is good, sometimes just having a middling quarterback like that is good enough. You know what I mean?
Right. No, and it very well could be. And you just kind of play for the upside. Just as a testament to the turnaround that we saw in Semien, even the Broncos coach, Gary Kubiak, Roto-World on Saturday was blurbing that Trevor Semien, quote, has made some poor decisions. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but we're just learning that he has to learn you're not in college anymore.
Yeah. End quote. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it's just like, wow, even his coach is saying, you're not in college anymore, learn to play in the NFL, and then he comes out and has a fantastic game against a good Bengals defense. So life changes fast if you're a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one other guy I wanted to talk about with you is another player you guys discussed last week, and that's Kirk Cousins. He's a guy who you and Ben both admitted to being a little bit lower than you had been in the preseason, but still relatively optimistic. Now, week three's performance on paper looks fine. You know, he had almost 300 yards, two passing touchdowns, you know, about 20 points fantasy-wise. Now, if you watched him play, though, he didn't look that good. And we heard those rumblings before the week that, you know, some of the other offensive players on the Redskins were not happy with the way Cousins had been playing. Are you still optimistic about Cousins? The volume definitely seems to be there. And I know that you mentioned that last week, and that definitely bodes well for Cousins, you know, for the rest of the season, if he can hold the job. But can he hold the job? Are we going to see Colt McCoy at some point?
I don't expect so. From what I've seen, he hasn't been great, but he also hasn't been like, there was progress this week. So as a Redskins fan, I watched the whole game. I watched everything, and I'm 100% biased, but the offense looked better. He still makes some dumb decisions. They still are making just poor choices on the field. His red zone efficiency still isn't there, but I think that you can't undervalue the volume. Their running game is still dreadful and isn't getting better, and he still has great weapons in the passing game. I don't think that they move on to Colt McCoy anytime soon unless there's an injury, just because Cousins is the one they need to know about. He's on the franchise tag. If they decide to move to Colt McCoy, it's essentially saying we've got nobody and we're going to have to draft a quarterback, because they know McCoy's not the quarterback of the future.
Everyone knows that.
that's very true.
I
expect
know that.
Cousins stays in. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you have to kind of ride out the storm with Cousins. Now, with that said, kind of based upon the past 2 weeks, this might be a good sell high moment. I'm not an avid trader, but I think it's always good to at least consider this stuff or think about it in the abstract, to think about, well, maybe I should try to get rid of Cousins, because you never know if someone still believes based upon last year or based upon the most two recent weeks of the season. If you could, you know, turn Kirk Cousins into, you know, a Carson Wentz plus something else, maybe that helps your team. I don't know. It's definitely roster dependent, as trades always are, but I think that he hasn't been as good as he's looked the past couple weeks, at least from a fantasy performance standpoint. I don't know. You're right about the volume, though, and I keep coming back to that point, and that does give me hope.
Yeah, and you're right. He has not looked great. He hasn't been the quarterback he was last year, and I'm certainly disappointed for the hope that I had for him. I just don't know that what you're going to get for him in a trade is going to be worthwhile. But, yeah, like you said, every trade is kind of context dependent. And so if you find an owner that really is high on Cousins and thinks he's about to become who he was last year, I can understand moving on.
How do you feel about Jordan Reed? He just hasn't been used quite the same way he was last year. Now, I don't know if they're giving him the Gronk treatment and trying to, you know, limit his usage so he stays healthy the whole year. But are you worried about Reed at all?
I'm not, just because he is still a huge piece of the offense. The concerning part is just the usage in the red zone, that Jamison Crowder has been their top red zone option, and he's a smallish slot receiver. Jordan Reed, they've got to start figuring out how to get him involved. I mean, they ran a fade to Jamison Crowder near the goal line when Jordan Reed was in single coverage on the opposite side. Some bad play calling has really been at fault, and I think that's something that can be fixed. Reed himself looks good. Cousins is really focusing on him, and he really is still an important part of the offense. I would expect the red zone looks will come, just because throwing to a slot receiver who does not have a good red zone game is not optimal. They'll get that fixed.
Yeah, and I think that that's another reason to have a little bit of optimism about Kirk Cousins, is that we've seen him be not great, but serviceable from a fantasy perspective. And Jordan Reed hasn't really caught fire yet. And I'm with you. I think it's going to happen eventually, because he's their best red zone guy, you know, and that's just something that's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, it was interesting. Josh Doctson was inactive this week. The rookie is someone that they did look at in the red zone in week two. So you can make an argument that Reed's red zone looks are going to be reduced, but I tend to think that this is something the team's going to figure out, is, hey, we need to get our great player involved in the red zone.
Yeah. Is there anybody else from week three that you want to discuss, whether it be a quarterback or some other position player?
A couple that stand out, just Carson Palmer with a dreadful week is something that a lot of people are going to be pretty scared by. He's one that I'd be looking at buying low. If you can find a panicking owner that just saw single-digit points from Carson Palmer, that's somewhere where you could just kind of throw out a low ball offer and throw out Kirk Cousins for Carson Palmer or something along those lines, because Palmer is not going to have many single digit weeks, if any others, this year. And so kind of move on from the fluky thing, expect good things to come. And so he's one I'd be targeting at this point just because of such a dreadful week.
I think that's a great call. He's kind of the polar opposite of Trevor Siemian. Like, he had a very solid first 2 weeks and then fell off the map in what was kind of just a bad situation. You know, Palmer had to go on the road traveling west to east to play a relatively tough Buffalo defense. And that's just not a good situation. I wasn't expecting four interceptions and no touchdowns, but you know, this is a good opportunity to kind of go try to get him if you can. I love that call. Anybody else?
What I was going to ask your opinion. I don't know how I feel about it. Ryan Fitzpatrick is kind of in a similar boat with a negative score line in week three. Is he a buy low for you, or is he someone you're just not very excited about?
I'm a little low on him because I do think that he was a guy who was doomed to regress to some extent. Now, again, like looking at, I just talked about the disadvantage that Palmer was at in week three. Playing on the road in Arrowhead Stadium is never a good thing either. And, you know, Fitzpatrick was without a full health Brandon Marshall. That is just bad for him. But if Marshall continues to be out, I think you have to be worried about Fitzpatrick. Now, so I wouldn't necessarily be buying low. But, you know, if you can buy ultra low, if you can get him for, you know, pennies on the dollar, then sure, why not? But those types of trades don't often materialize in 2QB leagues. So I wouldn't get my hopes up.
Yeah, no, it's true. He's kind of a hard piece to convince a 2QB owner to part with, just because you drafted him knowing this is who he is. He has good and bad.
Yeah, and I think as long as the weapons are there, he'll be fine. I did like that they got Bilal Powell a little bit more involved yesterday. I think that could really help open up the offense if both those running backs can contribute, you know, at a high level in addition to their kind of wealth of receiving talent. But yeah, I'm a little worried about Fitzpatrick, but not dreadfully so. His schedule is pretty rough, though. He gets Seattle and Arizona, and he's at Pittsburgh the next 3 weeks. So I'm not, yeah, I wouldn't be looking to go get him right now. But with that said, maybe after that Arizona matchup would be a good time to do that. Who knows?
Yeah, no, that's fair. No, I think those are the big ones for me. Is just anytime I see a dreadful performance from someone that I liked, I got to go through the mental kind of calculus of, is this the time to target them?
Yeah. Can you give me a quick check-in on the Monday night game between Breeze and Ryan?
Sure. It's 14-7 Atlanta right now. Both quarterbacks are looking great, not missing many passes. Kobe Fleener is getting his action. He has the first touchdown for Drew Breeze.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Who scored for Atlanta?
Tevin Coleman has a rushing touchdown, and Devontae Freeman has a receiving touchdown. So Man. Both running backs, and Julio has done nothing at this point.
Just all the committee owners are just so happy right now that both guys scored TDs. Maybe they're not happy. Maybe they're hoping that their guy would get two, but that's been an interesting situation to play out, hasn't it? That running back core.
Yeah, it has. I think Devontae Freeman owners have got to be real upset with how much they spent on him, but Coleman owners are really thrilled. So it kind of cuts both ways. But yeah, it's interesting to see. It's as it's playing out, we're midway through the second quarter right now, and they have about split touches. Coleman looked a little gimpy coming off earlier, so we'll see where that goes. But there is both of these offenses, Atlanta and New Orleans, just being so high powered. You want pieces where you can get them. So I think both those running backs have value.
Yep. With the Falcons, though, one thing to think about moving forward is they have a tough 3 week stretch, Carolina, at Denver, and at Seattle in weeks 4 through 6. So maybe temper your expectations based upon three awesome matchups to open the year with Tampa Bay, Oakland, and New Orleans. You might be in for a little bit of a reality check with your Falcons players in the upcoming weeks. But let's keep on going. Let's get to our spotlight QB for the week. This is Philip Rivers, the Philip Rivers experience, to be specific. And, man, just it's like a Greek tragedy with this dude. Like, he loses everybody. I made a joke on Twitter yesterday when Dontrell Inman caught a pass and then walked off the field limping. And I was like, well, Philip Rivers just can't have anything at all. Like, it's not that he can't have nice things. He doesn't get things. And, I mean, how much worse can things get for Rivers?
Yeah, it's It's dreadful. I mean, just watching this game, you could see it. I mean, the offense just doesn't look right, and you can't really blame anyone. This is not, I mean, this is half the offense they thought they would have at this point.
Yeah, it's really brutal. Like, I kind of wonder if Antonio Gates just saw that Keenan Allen and Danny Woodhead were hurt, and he was like, yeah, screw it, I'm out. Like, I'm just going to be hurt for a few weeks. Because, I mean, the team's not going to go anywhere at this point. I mean, not in my opinion.
It's a difficult situation. I've been high on Phillip Rivers all offseason, and I still think there's some value, but he has nowhere near the potential that he did at the start of the season. Just these injuries have really weakened the team. And, I mean, losing Keenan Allen and Danny Woodhead and then Antonio Gates for a short period, I mean, that's just, you can't expect a whole lot at this point, and I don't. But I don't know that you can move on is kind of the problem.
No, I mean, you'd be selling too low altogether. And I mean, I do think that you're right, that better weeks are to come. But I'm a little worried that Rivers is going to basically just be a spot starter going forward. Like, you're going to have to weigh him against the Wentzes and the Semyons of the world, which is just really sad because you paid such a steep price for him as that kind of low-end QB1 in drafts. Now, we usually do the quarterback finish game, but before we get to that, I want to try something new. We both zeroed in on Rivers. We watched the game pretty intently yesterday afternoon, and I just want to talk about one thing each of us noticed about Rivers from the game, and I'll start things off here. And the one thing I did kind of take away from watching him play was that his accuracy was not particularly good on the shorter and softer throws. There were a lot of little dump-offs and screen passes, especially to Melvin Gordon, that, you know, he just wasn't putting in good spots. Like, he'd throw it at the feet of the running back or over the head of somebody. I don't know if that's a lack of confidence on Rivers' part, if it's just maybe the receivers being in the wrong place relative to where Rivers expected them to be, or just, you know, general, you know, defense getting in his head on the road or whatever. But what's one thing that you noticed from yesterday's game, Josh?
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me is that Tyrell Williams is probably a piece that needs to be owned and isn't still in some leagues.
Oh, yeah, he should be at 100% ownership.
Yeah, just I don't know how good he is, but it's clear that Rivers is looking at him. I mean, Travis Benjamin has a very specific role he can fill, and it looks like Tyrell Williams is going to be a good complement to it. He looks to be a bigger guy. He looks to have a skill set that's different, and the fact that Rivers is already looking at Williams so much, that really stands out to me, just because, yeah, like you said, Rivers doesn't look comfortable, but it does look like he looks Williams' way fairly often.
Well, Williams might just be the best receiver he has. Like, Travis Benjamin, like you said, is kind of a role player. He has things that he does well and things that he doesn't do well, but Tyrell Williams is a real NFL receiver, it seems like, and especially if Antonio Gates is going to be out, that puts a lot of onus on Tyrell Williams to perform. And I think that especially with some of the matchups they have upcoming, New Orleans in week 4, Oakland in week 5, he could be a really nice value play. I don't know how cheap he'll be in DFS, but that's a guy you might want to keep a lookout for in that capacity if you can't get him in your yearly leagues.
Right. Yeah, no, I just coming back to your earlier point, because I agree with what you just said there. Your earlier point about Rivers looking uncomfortable, I think is true. And it's the thing that makes me sad, is because it's one thing to have worse pieces around you, but it did look like he is less comfortable in the offense right now. And that'll probably grow as he plays with these players. But I do think he is performing. I have to admit, I think he is performing worse than I expected to see this year. Just on his own, absent the struggles around him, he hasn't looked like a QB1 as I was hoping he would.
Yeah, and I think we can point at least to some extent to that offensive line yet again. It was a problem for them last year, and we thought it was going to be better this year. But, I mean, Indy's defense is not that good, you know, but they were really chasing Rivers around, punishing him and putting him into pressure situations where he was, you know, making inaccurate throws and forcing throws a little, you know, softer or harder than he needed to, just because he was under pressure basically all game. And that's a big concern for me, is that offensive line. And if he can't stay comfortable behind that line, then it's really going to negatively affect him going forward.
Right. No, absolutely. And it will hurt him as a passer. And I think you also want to see them have a good running game. You want to see Melvin Gordon be able to find good yards and be effective. I think that as much as volume is nice, you want a balanced offense, something that keeps the defense honest. And Gordon has looked better, but if the offensive line continues to struggle, it will inevitably hurt the running game as well.
All right, so with all this in mind, let's get to the QB finish game. I kind of like wrapping it up with this, actually. Where do you expect him to give you top 20 weeks going forward? How many games out of the remaining 13 would you expect Rivers to finish in the top 20 of the position?
Top 20 weeks of the next 13, I'll say that 9 of them will. I don't think that he has a terrible floor.
Yeah, and his upcoming schedule is good. He gets, you know, I mentioned New Orleans and Oakland, but he also gets Atlanta, Tennessee, Miami, Tampa Bay, Oakland, and Cleveland throughout the balance of the year. Now, there are some tough matchups in there as well. He has to play Kansas City twice. He has to play Denver twice. He's at Houston in week 12, but that's after the bye at least. I think 9's a little high. I might say 7 or 8 is what I would expect from him. I really worry about the injuries affecting, you know, his overall ceiling and leading to more potential weeks where he just bombs out like he did this one. I'll say 7 out of the next 13.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And we don't know exactly where he's going to finish because we're recording during Monday, but he's somewhere between QB 21 and 23 this week, even with the bad week. So I think the volume helps, but you're right that it really has looked shaky. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting the game.
Oh, no, that's good. Where do you think he finishes in terms of top 10 games? You had him at 9, top 20. How many of those do you think he'll be, you know, like an elite QB?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a struggle. I would expect it's going to be 3 or 4 more. He had 1 already, correct?
Yeah. Week 2 against Jacksonville.
I guess I'll say 4 out of the next 13 just because I'm not optimistic about the upside.
Yeah, I actually like that call. Well, I don't expect him to have a bunch of top 20 weeks. There are some matchups on the schedule that make me think that he could get into that top 10 discussion. So I'll echo your 4 there. I think that the floor is going to be a little lower some other weeks. Anything else on Rivers you got here before we move on?
I guess I'll just come back to the trade question because I think the reason I keep coming to trades this week is because I'm finally hitting the point in the season where I'm comfortable thinking about trading. It's moved past the react but don't overreact. I kind of think we know who some of these players are. Rivers, to me, I said earlier, is not really someone I think you can get good enough value to move on from. What about the converse or the reverse of that? Would you be targeting him trying to buy low at this point, or are you just out on that?
No, I kind of like the idea. But again, I'm the type of person who doesn't trade all that much in the first place. I like to feel like I'm getting a deal or improving my team when I do. And I'm just so skeptical about Rivers, you know, as evidenced by my predictions in the finish game. I don't know. I'd worry that I'd be buying damaged goods. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's, I guess that's the thing that I really struggle with because I am high on Rivers and I'm biased. It's a question of buying low versus kind of selling on these really hype guys. Like if you could move Carson Wentz for Phillip Rivers or something like that, I think there's a chance that you can get that trade done. Just Carson Wentz, Trevor Siemian, these guys that have had some really strong week threes. And I think I might almost do that.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think for Siemian, I would definitely pull the trigger. Again, if you're like hurting, if you were the guy who late round QB drafted a guy like Jay Cutler and Joe Flacco, that could put you in a spot where it is worth it to go out and get a guy like Rivers because he is being discounted now. If you were already playing bad quarterbacks, there's no shame in going out and getting another guy who could potentially be bad because then at the very least you can play matchups, right?
Right. No, it's true. And that is where Sal and Jim's podcast will help you out.
Yep. Don't miss that. The QB2 experience. I'm so satisfied with the way that worked out, to be honest, the naming symmetry. When Sal told me that, I was like, good idea, Sal. That's impressive.
Yeah, very good. I have enjoyed listening to their podcast. They really are doing good work with right and wrong calls. I mean, just like any of us have, but they bring some good analysis every week.
Yeah, that's fantasy. I mean, we're not going to be right all the time. No one is. That's just how it goes. Now, you bring up, you know, their podcast, but let's move on to the wrap-up section here and say that, you know, you guys should really be checking out everything at 2QBs.com. We've got a great team of writers and podcasters. who are pumping out content every week. We're trying to keep to a pretty regular schedule. You know, we have stuff every day, Monday through Friday, even some Saturday content as well. DFS redraft. You got to come check it out. 2QBs.com. That's TWOQBS. You can find us on social media as well at 2QBs, spelled the same way on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Greg Sauce and Josh at Lake2QBs. Search us up on Facebook. Give us a like there. Be sure to rate and review the podcast if you can. We'd really appreciate that. That helps other people find the podcast. And we know you don't necessarily want your league mates to find out about it, but you know, think about all the other 2QB folks who aren't in your league who could maybe benefit from this. And this is a community that we need to grow, right? This is the future of fantasy. 2QB is where we're moving as an industry. And rating and reviewing the podcast will get us out there in one more way. And that's just super helpful to us. You can send longer form questions to us by email at 2QBs@gmail.com. Josh, it's good to be back, man. I'm really excited to kind of dig my heels in for the fantasy season now that I'm home. And it's fun. I'm itching to do waiver pickups. Is that sad? Is that sick?
No, it's a fun time of year. You didn't get the week one kickoff experience just being overseas. So I totally get it.
Yeah, man. I didn't really realize how much I missed it until week two. I sat down in that Irish pub and my wife left me there wisely. She was like, I don't need to be a part of this. You have, you know, your affair with football for 2 hours. And man, I sat there watching the game and I really just had the itch for the rest of the trip. I was a little more active on my phone, on the Wi-Fi when we had it, you know, checking my rosters, looking at waivers and stuff. But man, it's just such a fun experience to play these games. And it is one thing that I kind of want to close out the episode with is just remember to make sure that this is fun for yourself. And if you're not having fun because your team's in the tank, find other ways to make it fun. Go play some DFS, do some stuff like that. And that's kind of where I want to wrap things up. Any final words for you, Josh?
No, it's good to have you back. It's good to chat. And I'm excited to see you in written form again. I know you've got good content coming out. So it's good to have you back all around.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how I do in the rankings this week after I had a good first couple weeks at Fantasy Pros. But I'm knocking on wood, man. That stuff never lasts. The fantasy football is too fickle a beast.
Right. No, you've had a very strong start, third overall in the rankings. And so we will see. I trust you'll keep doing well. But yeah, it's hard to sustain over 16, 17 weeks.
Yeah, regardless of how I finish, you'll know I'm trying my best. And like I said, and like Josh mentioned, I will have some written content coming out. If you ever listen or if you ever saw my game Flobotic stuff at the Fake Football last year, I'll be doing that again at 2QBs. So keep an eye out. And otherwise, we'll catch you next week on the 2QB Experience. We are out of here. Adios.